Okay, we move on now to Papers Five. Take it away.
Okay. All right, so the next issue we're talking about is IFRS 11, remeasurement of previously held interest, which we've discussed over the past couple of meetings. At the last meeting, we scoped out which transactions we should be looking at to evaluate whether or not previously held interest should be remeasured. And the first thing we did was look at what the existing guidance is and try to identify certain general principles that we could glean out of those that we could then use in the analysis of the specific transaction. So that's paper five, which basically discusses the existing guidance and the general principles. In looking at the existing guidance, what we came up with as a guiding principle was, firstly, that the significance of the economic event should be the main driving factor as to whether or not previously held interest should or should not be remeasured. We noted that the basis of accounting is more a secondary consideration that can be applied when we see whether or not there has been a significant economic event. We also identified that the applicable measurement model, for example, when you have a business combination, the measurement model is IFRS 3, it specifies a fair value model should be used, versus in other cases where the individual standards might specify a cost model to be used. So that's a relevant consideration as well. We thought the transactions should be evaluated differently depending on whether or not they are businesses, and now we have to look at that on a case-by-case basis. We also did not think that the structure of the investment and whether or not there was a separate legal entity in place necessarily affects the analysis. And where possible, we figured that we should avoid the use of the cost accumulation model where that is justified. So our first question is, does the committee have any comments on the general principles that we identified in paper five before we move on to the specific transaction?
I want to make sure I understood what you said, and it's point D in paragraph 7. The paper says the use of the cost accumulation model should be avoided.
Where justified.
Where justified. Correct. I think you might have stated it the other way around.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Yes. Yeah, okay. Use of the cost. Yeah, I would apologize for that. The cost accumulation model should be avoided where it can be justified. Yeah.
Okay, let's just go around the room. Bob?
I support the staff's analysis of this, or the model that you're going down. I think the criteria 1 and 2 are spot on. 3, I accept analyzing businesses different than assets. It's not a personal preference. I think we create too many differences between them, but we have to start someplace, and so I agree with that. I'm a little weary of D, avoiding the cost accumulation model, but I don't really think you're ever going to, I think in all the analysis and all the examples I think we went through or you go through, I mean, you kind of get through an answer, you get an answer coming with A and B, and you never really need to look at D.
Right.
Reinhardt?
I generally support the direction the staff has taken as well. I think in terms of the first criterion, the significance of the underlying economic event, I had one small concern with that, and that is that significance is in the eye of the beholder to some extent. And I think that another way to approach that is to look at the unit of account argument, in the sense that when you, under IFRS 11, when you acquire an interest in a joint operation, you're acquiring an underlying asset, be it fixed assets or whatever. And when you acquire an additional interest, you're buying fixed assets. The unit of account is that particular fixed asset. It doesn't mean you go back and remeasure the first bit you had, but when you get to something like dispositions or acquisitions of moving to control, the unit of account in IFRS 10 is the whole, the entire thing. And so, as I say, I would have perhaps approached it a little bit differently based on a unit of account, but would have come to the same spot. Where I'm a little bit leery is the conclusion that the structure doesn't matter. And the reason for that is because we clearly said in IFRS 11, the previous agenda decision, that structure does matter. That if you have your investment in a legal entity, there's a presumption that your exposure is to the net assets as opposed to the individual assets and liabilities, or your share thereof, I should say. And you've got to go through the other facts and circumstances to effectively, as we talked about before, pierce the corporate veil. So I think I'd prefer to see some more thought or consideration as to whether structure does matter, because it does in other circumstances. We talked about an IFRS 11, when we talked about the corporate wrapper issue and income taxes, clearly legal entity mattered. And so I'm not objecting. On the other hand, I'm not entirely comfortable that we've given it the thorough enough analysis.
Mikhail?
Yes, I actually had the same comment or wonder, because we discussed that a lot on IFRS 11 before, that legal structure was important for the conclusion, even if I think this is a more appropriate way to actually handle it. But then we are not consistent. And but otherwise, I think this is a good conceptual way forward for the solution.
John?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think the most important one is the significance of the underlying economic event, and I think that forms the basis for really a discussion about what's happened and whether remeasurement's appropriate. I mean, ideally, I don't think there should be any difference between a business and a group of assets, but given where the standards currently are on accounting for businesses and accounting for assets, I really think we probably do have to separate them, although I still don't really understand conceptual basis for why they're different. And the use of cost accumulation model should be avoided where it can be justified. I mean, it might be better to put that another way and say that put the onus on whether the end result of your decision on measurement actually gives something that sensibly reflects the economics, rather than necessarily focusing just on cost accumulation. It might be that cost accumulation is the appropriate method in a particular situation, although I don't know if I can actually think of one, but so.
Andrew?
Like some others, I think A and B are the primary principles to look at. So on D, the cost accumulation model, I think when you look at how that's explained, the real concern is a mixed, having the same asset, it's a mixture of values measured at a different date. Which, of course, if I peek ahead to the recommendation on 6C, is exactly where you end up, through a kind of purchase layers type approach. So a bit of a double-edged sword, but maybe we don't need that criterion. One thing's missing here is actually the relevance of recognising a gain or loss. You know, as is sometimes accused the IRSB of focusing too much on the balance sheet, and I think the current idea of the conceptual framework acknowledges that the implications for the income statement should be put on an equal footing. So can we think about the implications of remeasurement on the income statement, please?
Okay. All right, Sandy, before I move to the other side of the room.
Sure. I guess, I really like the chart in Appendix A, the matrix that sort of summarized things. But as I read things and I looked at the four criteria, right, the business versus asset thing is completely confusing to investors. because we don't really understand how that is organized, but it made me, or how that is decided, I guess. But as I looked at this and I looked at the four things we were saying were important, I said to myself, are we trying to decide the conceptual framework for when you remeasure? And is this the conceptual framework question as opposed to this particular issue question? And I haven't gone back to the revised conceptual framework. I responded to the discussion paper, but it sure said to me, and it's something that we care about a lot, and we care about gains and losses too. But it said to me, are we really going and saying that the four things that are deciding when you remeasure are the economic substance, which I agree with, the structure of the transaction, I really have a difficult one with that, business versus asset, and can't do the fourth one off the top of my head. But I sort of wondered, is this a conceptual framework question as opposed to this particular joint operation question?
Don?
I'm broadly comfortable with where the staff has...
The other guy with TON.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you. When we discussed this, we believe that what I said is okay. However, out of the 14 situations with no guidance, 5 are dealt with in the paper. Only for 3 of them, guidance is planned to be provided. And we were wondering whether it would be better to have a more comprehensive project. And how is the staff sure and the committee sure that if they would proceed with the 3, that the solution for the 3 will not conflict later on when you have to assess the other, it are 11 of 12 issues. So that is our major concern. So if you say, okay, we analyze that fully and we do not see any, we do not expect any problems in that area, we say, okay, we can live with the proposal, but are you sure that the solution will not conflict with?
No conflict with the...
Well, I think the question was, first, how did we eliminate all of the things that aren't in this paper? And I think the paper talks about that, but you might remind us of how we went through that process.
In terms of the other transactions?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So in terms of the... So at the last meeting, we had developed the matrix identifying all the several different transactions, types of transactions that could occur, and that we produce in Appendix A of this paper. And we had done outreach on each of these transactions where there is no guidance to see whether these transactions were common or were creating diversity in practice. And for other than those ones that have been noted and further analyzed in these papers, the outreach told us that those transactions were not common or at least were not causing any diversity in practice. So the committee's decision at the last meeting was not to address those but to start with these particular transactions. And that's why we focused our analysis on these transactions, the acquisition of control, loss of control, and this particular change of interest resulting in a party to a joint operation becoming a joint operator.
So I think I could add to that to say that we wouldn't have any plans to go back in the future to fill in any of the gaps other than those gaps that we've deliberately left because we see them as being covered by the equity accounting project.
Tony?
Others, I'm comfortable with where the staff's got to. I think I share one or two of the observations that other folks have made. I think Ranald talked about, well, we previously commented that actually in some cases structure is important, and there's something in paper 5B that argues that perhaps a you could argue that all joint operations are entities. I think that's a very dangerous statement because there's an awful lot of accounting that's based around joint operations not being entities. So I think just need to be careful with how we articulate it. But in terms of the direction and the conclusions, I'm comfortable.
Carl, and then I think we're ready to wrap up.
I also shared the same discomfort beforehand about the structure and legal entity. I'm not sure why we should scope out.
I think that, just to try and make sure my memory is clear, when we talked about structure in the context of 11, Alan told us that, at least in those situations, structure is substance. That if you had something that looked the same but was a structure, was an entity in one jurisdiction and not in another, that was substance. And so it wasn't a question of the substance over form, they were the same. I think the discomfort we're hearing here is that we're not certain whether that also applies in these circumstances.
Yeah, I think we do need to be careful about how we describe that. Going back to the IFRS 11, the observation was that the presence of an entity can change the rights and obligations,
right.
And it's the rights and obligations that we need to be focusing on. And so we mustn't lose sight of that observation in this project either.
Stated much more succinctly and carefully than mine was. Okay. So general support for 5 with some reservations for the motion. 5A.
Perfect. So we move on to 5A, which was the first transaction on acquisition of control of a joint operation, where you were either previously a joint operator or previously a party to a joint operation. And as we looked at this case, we used the same principles that we had come up with in paper 5, and we noted that the acquisition of control, first we look at cases involving businesses. So we noted that in those cases, the transaction does represent a significant economic event. And we think that the measurement model in IFRS 3, which specifies that previously held interest should be remeasured, is also applicable in this scenario. We looked at whether the structure of the investment should make a difference, and consistent with our previous analysis, we concluded that in this scenario, it should not matter whether or not it's structured through an entity or not. We did see that paragraph 41 and 42, the current wording in there, which specifies, we talk about equity interest, we did see that that could provide some technical basis for concluding that that remeasurement is not necessarily applicable in these transactions, and therefore we would suggest making an amendment in the form of an annual improvement, which we have presented in the paper as well. For non-business transactions, we think that IFRS 3 paragraph 2B describes the typical accounting for acquisitions of assets, and that specifies that a cost allocation model is used. To us, that implies that it's a cost-based model and you should not remeasure. Also, this guidance has been outstanding for a number of years, and we have not heard of any significant concerns in this area. We do not think there is diversity in practice. For this reason, we do not think the committee needs to address transactions not involving a business. And with that, I'd like to turn to the questions in paper 5A, which is firstly for businesses. Do you agree with our conclusion that remeasurement should be required? And if yes, do you agree with our recommended annual improvement, along with the transition provisions and effect transition provisions for that? And lastly, for non-businesses, do you agree that this does not need to be addressed by the committee?
Comments? John?
Yeah, I agree with the staff analysis and the recommendation for an amendment. Just in relation to the wording of the amendment in paragraph C1AA, you refer to paragraph 42 being amended, but there's actually no amendment to paragraph 42. So.
Is that just a markup error? Or
yes, that's just a markup.
Okay, so there are changes there, we just didn't tell you where.
Yeah, just in C1AA.
Yeah, I got that.
No.
No, there are no changes to 42.
Yeah.
Whatever, we'll fix it. Bruce.
Thanks. I was going to say, I agreed with the recommendation made by the staff. As per the last meeting, I'm fully supportive of being very much in line with IFRS 3 when we've got these changes. So I think it's consistent with the approach in it. I know we've had the discussion, but I think it's right that the structure of it makes no difference. So fully agreement with them.
Reinhardt?
I agree with the staff recommendations and also with the proposed amendments. What I might suggest, though, is I was a little bit concerned in terms of paragraph 41. We've defined equity interest. Where we say it shall include an interest in the assets and liabilities of a joint operation. And rather than prejudge what an equity interest is, I think there's another way of putting it, just to simply say, you know, the fact pattern, an entity may acquire control of a joint operation and then carry on. This IFRS refers to such a transaction as a business combination. So.
Okay. Tony?
Yeah, I agree with where the staff's got to. My only comment was also on C1AA, which is to be clear what we mean by prospectively. is that to acquisitions after the date this becomes effective, or is it just we're accounting for these things in the first set of financial statements but restating the past? I assume we mean the former.
Transactions.
So it's transactions after, but
correct.
It might be helpful to specify that rather than saying prospectively.
Always a good idea. With those exceptions, does anybody disagree? Charlotte, you're going to disagree?
I only had a question on the wording, and it's not the amended bit of 41. And it's just a question of why it's narrowed down to holding equity interest before and then purchasing an additional 40% interest. And it's not just in the context of joint operations. If control is held through non-equity means, you may have held debt interest or another contract before. And it just seems to be almost saying you can only hold either equity interest or an interest in a joint operations, but in no other circumstance do you revalue, to remeasure. So in a structured entity way, the control might be through holding a debt instrument.
Let us think about
that. Yeah, let us think about that.
Yeah.
We can put it back.
That notwithstanding, any other problems?
Just one that.
Andrew?
On paragraph 42, which isn't amended, it talks about booking the remeasurement through P&L or OCI if you've previously measured the interest at a fair value through OCI, or words along those lines. If it's an interest in a joint operation, it's possible that you'll be using the revaluation model for some items of PP&E and not be using a revaluation model for other assets. So I think you could actually take some of the revaluation through OCI and some through P&L. So maybe that could just be looked at and drawn out.
Take that on. Other than that, we okay with this paper, with the annual improvement? All right, 5B.
Okay, moving on to 5B, which is the inverse of the acquisition of control. This is actually the loss of control, where subsequent to the transaction, the investor is a joint operator or a party to the joint operation, and the question is whether the retained interest should be remeasured. Again, applying the same principles we had in paper 5, we first looked at transactions involving businesses, and we saw that the transaction represents a significant economic event. And we felt that the guidance in IFRS 10 on remeasurement of retained interest should be applicable. Again, we looked at whether the structure of the investment matters, and we did not think in this scenario it resulted in a different answer. For non-businesses, we are not aware of the transaction being common in practice, but we note that the IFB recently had an amendment where they discussed sale or contribution of assets to a joint venture or an associate because of a perceived conflict between IAS 28 and IFRS 10, and whether gains and losses should be fully recognized or whether they should be partially eliminated. And in that scenario, the IFB had originally decided that for businesses, all gains and losses should be recognized, and this would result in the retained interest being measured at fair value. And for non-businesses, the IFB had decided that there should be partial elimination of gains and losses. So the answer that you got for retained interest would be different depending on whether or not you had a business or not a business, and what the nature of that retained investment was as well. We know that there are similar provisions in IFRS 11 as well for accounting for downstream transactions and elimination of gains. And there is a similar conflict with IFRS 10 on whether or not you recognize full gains and losses. So because of the similarities, and the IFB subsequently decided to defer these amendments pending completion of the research project on equity accounting, and because of the similarity of the transaction that we are discussing with the transaction that the IFB has looked at and deferred the amendment for, our recommendation is that we defer discussions on this issue as well until the IFB has finalized its research project on equity accounting and has finalized what to do with this amendment. So with that, I'd like to turn over to the question, and our question is, A, do you agree with deferring the discussions? And for non-business transactions, do you agree that these transactions are not as common and do not need to be looked at? So I'd like to open
question, given some of our earlier discussions today on things that we defer and restart, and the completion of a research project, won't tell us what the answer is.
I guess it's more waiting until the IRP decides what to do with that amendment that they have put on deferral.
Okay, so that's the key.
That's
the
problem, correct.
Yes, because the research project for, there's a short-term research project for equity accounting, which would be, the next step would actually be an exposure draft. And then there's a longer-term research project where the next stage would be a discussion paper. So we're talking about the short-term.
The short-term, okay. Part. I'm sorry, that wasn't clear to me. Others? General agreement to defer?
If the board has put a similar issue on hold, I don't see how we could come up with anything that's going to make a difference.
Tony, do you want to come in or?
Why not? I would just prefer to come to a sensible answer. I'd be inclined to get on with it, but just we've got an answer that's consistent. We've seen lots of nodding heads around the basis for the analysis. It just seems curious to me that we've come up with something that it seems that we all agree with, but we're going to hold it up.
What is the timing on the short?
I genuinely can't recall. One of the things that we could do is, because obviously, you know, on the first paper, the recommendation is for an amendment. We could, as part of presenting the conclusions from the discussions here to the board, also identify this and just sort of flag this up and say, look, you know, yes, we, you know, the Interpretations Committee could reach a conclusion on this. However, we note that the board has this other accounting project on the go at the moment. Therefore, we seek the board's advice on whether or not this should be parked meanwhile, or does the board actually think this bit could go ahead?
I think.
Yeah, that works.
That's a good strategy. John?
I agree with the conclusion, and I would agree with sort of with proceeding. However, I do think this issue is a lot more complicated than sort of being made out, because you are actually recognising rights to individual assets and liabilities because it's an interest in a joint operation. So there's questions such as the measurement of goodwill, because we're talking about recognising interest in joint operations that are a business. So you may very well have a lot of unrecognised assets which you control and that have now been created while you controlled it, and you're basically losing control and having a joint operation. And so it seems to me like it's, you know, just saying that you remeasure here raises questions about, well, how exactly are you remeasuring? Is there sort of a quasi IFRS 3 PPA applied to the interest in the joint operation? So I think some more guidance around that remeasurement might be beneficial. Some people may interpret you're just remeasuring the recognised assets and liabilities which you had in the group accounts, which I don't think is what's meant by remeasuring the interest in the joint operation. So I think it's a notional PPA process applied to the interest in the joint operation, which of course would mean picking up goodwill which was internally generated while you controlled the business. So I do think the issue is more complex than the reverse scenario. I also think that I'm sort of concerned by the comment that it's not common that you would lose control of assets in a joint operation, because I think that is actually probably more common often than losing control of a business that's a joint operation. So I agree with separating the two because we're dealing with them as separate issues, but I don't think it's uncommon. So.
All right, so I think the outcome is that we flag this to the board. Maybe even with the comment that we think we got a sensible answer. But given the similarity with what they all did, we're hesitant to proceed. I ask their advice. Okay. 5C.
Yes, moving on to 5C, which is the last transaction. And this is a transaction that deals with This was the original submission that came in, and this is a transaction that deals with where a party to a joint operation acquires an interest, and as a result of that acquisition now becomes a joint operator in the transaction. So again, we looked at transactions involving a business and consistent with the analysis that we presented in May. We do not think the transaction represents a significant economic event, and we do not think the remeasurement is appropriate for this transaction. This is also consistent with the measurement model in IFRS 11, which refers back to the individual standards for the assets and liabilities. And again, we did not think the structure created a difference in our view on whether or not the previously held interest should be remeasured. We do acknowledge that the current wording in IFRS 11 could provide a basis for remeasuring, and as a result, for transactions involving businesses, we have again proposed an amendment in the form of an annual improvement. For non-businesses, again, going back to, it's similar to the case that we had discussed in paper 5A, where IFRS 3 provides some guidance on typical accounting for asset acquisition, and we think that that same guidance would be applicable for non-business transactions in this scenario as well, and therefore we do not think the committee needs to provide any further guidance in that area. And with that, I'd like to turn over to the question on paper 5C, which is, A, do you agree with the analysis for a business that remeasurement should not be required? If so, do you agree that the amendment meets the criteria for an annual improvement, and do you agree with the wording and the transition provisions? And lastly, for non-businesses, do you agree that no further guidance is required?
Comments? Tony?
Subject to my comment about the word prospectively that I made before.
John, did you want to come in, or is that on from before? Okay. I see heads nodding yes, so
proceed.
Go for it.